With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Entering a podcast unlike any other. You're entering a scary, spooky podcast that like no one is doing in the month of October. I should have written this ahead of time.
You should have. I was like, just recently we've been, you and I together have both been praising the writing of Futurama's Scary Door openings, which I assume you were as much parodying just then as the Twilight Zone, because I know that you're probably more familiar with the Scary Door. And yeah, I think that like going into that, I was like, damn, he was really just going to try and improv. AJ, who famously hates doing improv, is just going to try and improvise something that he's just, you know, praised at how well it's written. So,
that could be, this could all be part of the opening. It's like, a man who hates improv, forced to improv, you know. Prepare to enter the Cult Popture Podcast. It's Spooktober, baby! My name's AJ, and I'm joined by Richard. And for this month, to get into the spooky spirit, something I love doing, and there's an energy in the year that I'm looking forward to harnessing. We're gonna be spooky, and for Halloween we're gonna do a spooky month. We've done this the last couple of years, and I enjoy it, and I think it's a fun time.
It's funny that you talk about like there's an energy in the air, but it's like Halloween is so not a thing in New Zealand.
No, it's not. But I think if Halloween is anything in New Zealand, it is a indication of what time of year it is, and that's, you know, leading into Christmas and stuff. I think that is a very exciting time to be in New Zealand. That's when it's summer. You know, people associate Halloween with autumn.
Right. So what you're actually associating with Halloween is Christmas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Christmas.
Really, we should just cover the Nightmare Before Christmas for a month.
Let's just do it. Every month.
Every month.
We become just that.
Every month.
That reminds me, actually, if people are interested, I have made a novelty Twitter account called Free Podcast Ideas, where I post ludicrous or unrealistic ideas for podcasts. It's mainly about coming up with a name. I'll put a link to it in the show notes if people want to follow that on Twitter.
The Nightmare After Christmas. It's an annual podcast released every Boxing Day where you watch a horror film.
That's too realistic. It's too good of an idea. The best one we've got so far, which you and I sort of collaborated on, is No Country for Gary Oldman, which is watching every movie that doesn't star Gary Oldman. Like, that's the kind of energy I want them all to, like, you know, these unrealistic kind of premises, I guess. But that is not what we're here to do. We're not here to pitch bad podcast ideas. Richard, what are we doing? What's today's episode? What's the first Spooktober?
We're actually doing a bad podcast idea today.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be covering pop culture curses. Cool.
You're being very mean. I think this was suggested by someone on the Discord.
Yeah, no, I know. It was a joke. I was doing a funny segue.
Well, it's Spooktober, so we need to be doing spooky segues. Thank you very much.
Right, okay. Well, like, the podcast idea was so bad that it died and it was resurrected as this. It's a good idea. It's similar because we did pop cultural conspiracy theories last year, and so I think this is like a good kind of thing where essentially this time I've got 6-ish pop cultural conspiracy theories And what we're going to do...
Curses, you mean?
I do mean curses. What we're going to do is... I'm going to explain them to you, AJ, and you, yes. The listeners. And then we're going to try and decide if this is a legitimate curse or not.
Okay.
I will say, before we start, do you believe in curses?
I, for a long time, believed I was cursed. Just because I was couldn't get a girlfriend.
just because I was celibate, but it was involuntary.
So for those who don't know me or don't listen to the podcast, one interesting thing. One interesting thing I bring to the show, and maybe an interesting dynamic thing about me as a podcast host, used to be very religious. I used to be very spiritual, and a lot of that was considerate of curses. I remember we inherited a bunch of touristy souvenir canopic jars, Egyptian canopic jars from my grandfather when he passed away when I was about 7 years old. And after my brother translated the hieroglyphics on them to
that's
be like,
such a your brother thing to do.
Death shall come on swift wings to those who open this. My father made us remove them from the house because, grandpa had just died and we got them from him. So that sort of, and these would have been made in 2002 and people China, completely plastic. I would say I don't believe in curses anymore, but I used to be very into curses, and I believe there is really interesting stuff. And I should also say this episode, thank you to Bliss My Dog, who suggested this on our Discord a couple weeks back. So that's why we're doing this episode. Do you believe in curses?
Well, thank you. No. Yeah.
It's just an episode of naysayers. Here we go.
there's some spooky coincidences that are fun to look at, but to actually believe something is cursed is, quite a big leap, I think.
Foolish. Would you call it foolish?
Childish. Childish.
Childish. But very spooky.
Okay, so the first quote-unquote curse we're going to talk about today is called the Superman curse.
I've heard of it.
Oh, well then I
In
won't.
In fact, I suggested
I won't
it. No, please. I actually don't know that much about it.
No,
I
know about it. You're clearly the expert, Mr. I've heard of it.
No, tell me it.
Okay, so the curse is that the Superman has supposedly cast a number, or the Superman cursed has a curse has cast a number of misfortunes on people involved in the Superman franchise over the decade, from career ruin to death.
Oh my God.
So George Reeves, who played Superman in the 1950s TV series The Adventures of Superman, was found dead in 1959 of a single gunshot wound to the head. The death was ruled a suicide, but they didn't find his fingerprints on the gun. They never found his fingerprints on the gun. So it's likely murder. But
wow, I didn't know that someone was murdered from who played Superman.
And then there's Christopher Reeve, no relation, because they actually have different last names, Reeves and Reeve. Had similar bad luck after success in four Superman films. He was thrown from a horse in 1995, leaving him paralyzed from the waist down.
He passed away in what, 2000?
He lived a pretty fulfilling life after after his accident.
But was paralyzed.
Yeah. Good friends with Robin Williams, I believe, and he would call him. And I think when he got into his accident, he got a call from Robin Williams, who was like, "Hey, it's me, your proctologist, here to look at your butt." And that was like the first time he laughed after the accident. Those are the two kind of most famous ones.
I love whenever something in history is referred to as a curse, you're like, oh, that's fascinating. You dig a little deep, it's like two examples back it up.
But also, like, the other things like linked to it are like Dean Cain had a really bad career after Lois and Clark. Ooh.
Which he definitely wasn't sabotaged by himself.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Brandon Routh hasn't had much of a career either. That's the whole curse, really.
I wouldn't even say Brandon Routh hasn't had much of a career, though. He's been in plenty of stuff.
Yeah, I know. Henry Cavill's like probably going to be cancelled one day.
Henry Cavill's career is a slump because of he can't get out of Superman, basically. Mm. Like, maybe that's the Superman curse.
Yeah, and he likes his women young as well.
Right. Okay. I don't know anything about
nothing.
This.
Nothing illegal. It's worth pointing out. But yeah, he's dated a few under 20-year-olds. I think.
I don't know if that's attributable to a curse, though. I think that's both true of many actors and also his own doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn, the Superman curse that's made me so attracted to 19-year-olds.
That's what I love about the Superman curse. I get older. Yeah, so cracked.com attributes this. It might be that it was the curse was from Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who created Superman, but they were completely screwed out of the royalties due to being under contract to DC Comics.
Yes, famously.
Then, 1975, they were finally begrudgingly awarded a yearly pension from Warner, DC's parent company, who wanted to avoid bad publicity just before the release of the first film. But apparently, the $35,000 a year they paid out wasn't enough to offset the curse.
No, definitely
so it actually
not.
Yeah, like almost predates the curse. It also just has a fun little tenuous link to the curse. According to inside sources, in 1963, John F. Kennedy's staff approved of a Superman story in which the hero touts the president's physical fitness initiatives, scheduled to be published on April 1964. On November 22nd, however, Kennedy was shot and killed.
See, you can convince me it's a curse if the day they were going to announce that was the day he died. Then it's relevant. But without that, I think it's just a bunch of dates and things thrown out. There were probably plenty of things that Kennedy couldn't get around to because he died. You know, you don't call them a curse.
Yeah. So we don't think the Superman curse is a curse?
I don't think the Superman curse is a curse. I'm calling it. Not a
coincidence.
Curse.
Yeah.
Curse or coincidence? Is that the episode name?
Maybe, yeah.
Oh.
So here we go. Here's another one that we don't even actually need to debate.
Because it is a curse.
Yeah, obviously. So the Oscar love curse is quite a famous curse that floats around Hollywood. So much so that it even has its own Wikipedia page.
Oh, wow.
But which I'll just read in its entirety, which isn't as arduous of a task as it sounds.
It's actually a super long Wikipedia page, and you just read it now.
Yeah. So the Oscar love curse, or Oscar curse, is a superstition that the woman who wins the Academy Award for Best Actress will have her boyfriend, fiance, or husband cheat on her or divorce her soon after.
Mm.
I swear this page used to have a list of examples. It doesn't anymore. But I remember, like, Sandra Bullock, Jesse James cheated on her. That was one of the ones I remember. But there's like a handful of examples, kind of thing. Like there are for most of these.
Mm-hmm.
It has also been applied to the Best Supporting Actress and to the Best Actor winner. A 2015 study found that the divorce rates of female Oscar winners and nominees did not increase, but the divorce rates of male Oscar winners and nominees did. Interestingly,
right.
Another version of an Oscar curse is that if an individual wins either a Best Actor or Actress or Best Supporting Actor or Actress, their career will collapse shortly thereafter. Sources indicate that the originator of the superstition was Louise Rayner, who after winning two Oscars for Best Actress in the 1930s had fewer roles in films afterwards, which she apparently blamed on receiving the awards. The 2015 study found the opposite to be true. Male and female Oscar winners and Oscar nominees appear in more films following the Oscar experiences than do other actors. Now that's the entire Wikipedia page. So they did a study that debunked both curses. So I'm going to say this. Is a coincidence.
I don't know. I've looked up examples of the Oscar love curse, the first one. Here are some examples. Rachel Weisz, apparently, Darren Aronofsky, cheated on her. Emma Thompson, Gina Davis, Jane Fonda, Kathy Bates, Goldie Hawn, Julie Andrews, Kim Basinger, Helen Hunt, Kate Winslet, Hilary Swank, Halle Berry, Reese Witherspoon, Angelina Jolie. This seems legit to me, Richard. Or could it be more that Hollywood is an acting culture is a vile place where temptation is to cheat on your partner is more common than maybe other areas.
I don't think it's necessarily more common. I mean, you look at the divorce rates, you know, everywhere, and you look at the amount of
bakers.
You
zone in on a specific, like, no, man, engineers, like, that's where the curse is.
Yeah. But I think that for a lot of people, the winning an Oscar, being nominated, changes your star trajectory. And it's not an Oscar one, but I would say, like, one of the classic examples I think of, like, a Hollywood divorce is Anna Faris and Chris Pratt. They got together, she was a big star, and, you know, it's hot off Scary Movie, and he was like this schlubby everyman comedic, just kind of likable guy from Parks and Rec, and then overnight he became the hottest, most beloved A-lister in the world. And while she, you know, was on season whatever of Mom, and I think that understandably would really, really put a strain on your marriage and completely change the dynamic. And, you know, they split up, and now, you know, Chris Pratt's back to, you know, not being the sexiest, hottest, most beloved person in Hollywood. But I think that an Oscar would probably do similar things, that you start being more in demand, it puts a strain on your marriage, and especially, you know, if your husband is Jesse, or your partner's Jesse James from that show that I used to real like. What was this show called? He's a Weirdo, but fuck, that show was good, whatever it is. Jesse James. Yeah. No, not him.
I think that's a
Monster
good point.
Monster Garage. Fuck yeah, that was mean.
Did you ever see that clip from the show Mom where Anna Faris just quotes Rick and Morty to a little kid? And, like, the joke is just that they're quoting Rick and Morty. It's not like the joke is that Rick and Morty's funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Like, they're not putting it, the writers of Mom didn't put a joke on top of that. The joke, like, the laugh track plays after Anna Faris goes, wubba lubba dub dub. And it's like, the joke
Wait,
is
she
just
say wubba lubba dub.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. That's the curse right there. The Rick and Morty curse. Anyone who mentions Rick and Morty, their career is cursed.
Oh, the girl's wearing a Rick and Morty shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 12 seconds long. Let me have a look.
Okay.
So you like Rick and Morty, huh? Yeah. I got into it because of my son. Now I love it too. Wubba lubba dub dub. And then Anna Faris burps. All right. Yeah, okay. No, that's bad.
You know what I mean? The joke is that the writing on Rick and Morty is apparently funny.
What?
You know?
I don't know that it is. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway. But then, like, Eighth Grade, the Bo Burnham's movie, ends with quite a charming, almost exact replica of that scene.
Yeah, but the one in Eighth Grade is not necessarily funny. It's more cute.
Yeah.
And they're also little kids, which I think.
Yeah, but I we might be seeing this scene out of context. I think from what I get from that scene, Anna Faris's character, daughter, I think is her name, is trying to connect with maybe her daughter, I don't know. Granddaughter, yeah. Yeah, and Monster Garage was fucking sick.
I think with the Oscar love curse, we can look at it more as though the thing about, like, some curses, alleged curses, like the Superman one is like, out of all the people in the world, two pretty bad things happened to two people who were involved with this pretty ubiquitous thing, right? But with the Oscar...
Getting thrown off a horse.
Yeah. Well...
Oh, no, you mean playing Superman. Yep, cut up.
Yeah, playing Superman. Whereas the Oscar love curse is just like when you follow the logic, things like this happen, you know? And a lot of curses, I think, come down to those two reasons.
Exactly.
I'm not going to call it coincidence, but I'm not going to call it curse. I'm going to call it human nature.
Oh, deep. So another curse that's just like, this is just how things work. This is the Seinfeld curse. Julie Louis-Dreyfus, Jason Alexander, and Michael Richards all tried to launch new sitcoms as title role characters after the end of Seinfeld. Almost every show was cancelled quickly, usually within the first season. The ones specifically cited Julie Louis-Dreyfus's Watching Ellie, Jason Alexander's Bob Patterson and Listen Up, and Michael Richards's The Michael Richards Show. The curse was mentioned throughout the second season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which has Jason Alexander go to Larry David to the, make a new show together, and it's going to be about a sitcom actor who's had a successful sitcom and can't break out of it. Yeah, and it's a good arc.
And then he ditches Jason Alexander because he'd rather it stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah,
and the show was going to be called Aren't You So-and-So, or Aren't You, you know, Aren't You Name of Character.
Yeah, yeah. In real life, though, Larry David has dismissed the idea of a curse, saying it's so completely idiotic, it's very hard to have a successful sitcom. But then, of course, Julia Louis-Dreyfus had The New Adventures of Old Christine, which won, she won a Primetime Emmy Award for, leading many to believe that she'd broken the curse. In her acceptance speech, she said, "I'm not somebody who really believes in curses, but curse this, baby." It made enough episodes to air in syndication for several years, something that none of the other shows did. Her Saturday Night Live episode she hosted referenced the curse. And then the curse finally struck when after five seasons, ratings declined and it was cancelled.
Curse strikes again!
But then she went on to win 6 further Emmys for playing Selena Meyer in Veep.
Yeah, Veep. Like, that's... You know, I haven't seen it, but from my understanding, it's probably one of the better sitcoms of recent years. And so, like, that's just not a coincidence, a curse, or a human nature. That's just not a thing.
Well, I think that what Larry David said is that, like, dozens of shows fail every year. You just were paying attention to these ones because they starred an actor you liked. You could also attribute the failure of B-Movie to this curse as well, I think.
I would attribute the failure of B-Movie to the fact that it is a bad idea for a movie.
Yeah. There was also The Marriage Ref, which apparently the Screen Crush references that.
What is that?
It was like a reality show that he...
Who?
Executive producer, sorry, Seinfeld. this article also references like Bryan Cranston, and it's like, no, he's undoubtedly this is like looking at the cast of Seinfeld cursed, and it's like it references like Bryan Cranston, Jerry Stiller, Patrick Warburton, all that went on to do pretty well supporting characters in the show. But I think
not that, to defend the curse, but I think it's reasonable to put the parameters on it around the four main characters.
But I think that there's I can't remember the name of the YouTube channel now, but there's this guy who does like looking at kind of forgotten failures and stuff. And he did one on the Michael Richards show, and I think on that Bob Patterson show, where Jason Alexander plays a narcissistic but wildly insecure self-help guru, which is a great idea for a series. And it's kind of interesting looking at like they all are trying to be like, look, it's George, look, it's Kramer, but just not connecting. And it's like, it's like just fully be George or just fully be Kramer or just do something completely different. But it's like trying to sell it on, look, it's the same person, but then it's kind of not. And it's like, it's familiar enough that you're intrigued, but not enough that it's actually good.
That YouTube channel is called Hats Off Entertainment.
Yeah.
They do Forgotten Failures. I would also say that I think it's bad to call a show the name of actor show. I don't think that format works anymore. And
Bob Newhart.
Yeah, but even that, he played Bob Newhart in it. Like,
well, I'm just saying, that's probably the last one that was really successful.
The Michael J. Fox show, which was about Michael J. Fox played a news anchor who has to quit because he gets Parkinson's. And when that was announced, I was like, what a great idea for a Michael J. Fox project. Mm. Like one where he, you know, the character has Parkinson's and it's justified by the story and that's what it's about. And they called it the Michael J. Fox show and it got cancelled after one season. Mm. And I just feel like that was part of it. I didn't want to watch a show with such an unimaginative name.
Yeah. For the record, for a couple of things there, in the Michael J. Fox show, his character's name was Mike Henry. Bob Newhart's character in the Bob Newhart show was called Robert Hartley.
Ah, so he wasn't. Yeah. I mean, that's Bob Hart, you know, Robert Hartley.
Bob Newhart.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah. Yeah, but I and there's also like the Mary Tyler Moore show, but there was like there was a sitcom.
These are old shows, though. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is I don't think this works anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, a lot of these ones, they're not actually the character's name, which is weird. But, yeah, I watched the first couple episodes of the Michael J. Fox show because I was very intrigued by the idea, and his wife was played by Betsy Brandt, from Hank's wife from Breaking Bad.
Nice. Well, okay. What do you think? Are we calling this one a curse or a coincidence?
No, I don't think this is a curse. I think this is how these things work.
I think then that is a coincidence.
Well, no, it's not even a coincidence. It kind of is a curse, really. But it's not. It's not in the sense of like there's something supernatural going on. This is just what happens when you achieve this level of fame for this long attached to a single IP. It's just being typecast, really, is what it is.
So it's not. So we've had one coincidence, one human nature, and one typecasting.
Yeah, well, one, yes, they're cursed by the fame of Seinfeld, but not by like not in a supernatural way.
All right, let's call it a curse just so it can get on the board.
That's so funny that the Seinfeld curse is real.
Well, I think we're changing the definition of what a curse is in order to score points.
So next up, this one is like a more kind of proper definition of the term. This is the poltergeist curse. This is a big one that a lot of people talk about. So it's a rumored curse attached to the Poltergeist trilogy and its crew, due to not one but two people dying who were involved. So this is the two young cast members. This occurs between the releases of the first and third films. There was an E! True Hollywood Story called The Curse of Poltergeist, which explored the curse. And can I just say, much like Monster Garage, fucking how good were E! True Hollywood Stories? Did you ever watch them?
Whatever.
No, straight up. Yeah, did you watch?
What, did you watch what are E! True they? Hollywood or Stories? Or am I thinking? I'm thinking of Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah, no. E! True Hollywood Stories. They were essentially like true crime docos. They were like an hour long, and so it'd be like The Curse of Poltergeist. And they also did like the it was like Hot 100 or something, or like E! Countdown kind of thing, and it would be like most shocking moments on live television kind of thing, and they were like fascinating. They're so good, like straight up. I genuinely, my sister and I watched a lot of E! True Hollywood Stories growing up. But so the two kind of main deaths, Dominique Dunn, who played the eldest daughter Dana in the first film, died in 1982 at age 22 after being strangled by her ex-boyfriend. He was convicted of voluntary manslaughter and sentenced to 6 years in prison, but was paroled after serving 3.5 years, of course.
Wow.
It just also says she also appeared in the 1982 movie Shadow Riders. Okay. Heather O'Rourke, who played Carol Ann in all three films, died in 1988 at the age of 12 due to complications from an acute bowel obstruction.
Right.
So yeah, at age 12 and 22, dying. But then you also have Julian Beck, who played the old man in part two, died of cancer, and Will Sampson, who you also is the Native American actor from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He died during an operation.
Okay. See these.
Yeah. But also the other thing that's like, so you know, Poltergeist revolves around desecrating the remains of Native Americans, they're angering the spirits, and in an act of sheer stupidity, the filmmakers actually used real human remains and desecrated them for the film. So this one's kind of like, you know, more fun to think of as a curse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. At the same time, I feel like here's what happens with these curses. Two people related to something die, and someone goes, oh, man, if one more person dies, I'm calling it a curse. But no one else dies, and so they get so excited that they're like, I'm just calling it a curse anyway.
Well, no, it's like an old man dies of cancer, and they're like, yeah, it's a curse.
It's a curse. That's all I needed. Yeah, like... I wish it's always like you hear about the Superman curse and the poltergeist curse, like all your life as a consumer of this sort of stuff, and then when you actually learn about them, it's always so meager in what's actually happened. You know, I'm sad that those people have died, but it's not like it's
I just wish more had.
No, well, kind of. No, I don't wish more had. I'm saying it would make...
It'd be a lot cooler if they did.
Be a lot more convincing that it was a curse if more people died or more bad stuff happened. I think the key to this is the desecration of actual Native American bodies. That's probably lends more credence to it. But no, I think I'm going to go coincidence with this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is coincidence.
Mm-hmm. I'll go curse then.
Okay, so next up, we've only got a couple of these left. This is going to be a nice quick episode for us. So there's actually a 2-for-1. So you would have seen people reference the Confederacy of Dunces curse, but there's also the Artuk curse. Mm. Artuk is a hilarious fish out of water screenplay about an Inuit who comes to New York. It was never filmed because everyone who was in talks to play the lead role died. So John Belushi was attached to it before his drug overdose in 1982.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So they pass it on to Sam Kinison, who was then killed in a car crash. And then it was passed on to John Candy, who died of a heart attack. And then they said, you know what? Let's never make this film until, you know, fourth chubby funster Chris Farley dug up the script and was in talks to play the role before dying.
Seriously? Wow. Yeah. That one's actually pretty compelling. I was about to mention Chris Farley and be like, was he? Because I kind of think of John Belushi, John Candy, and Chris Farley as the like defining trilogy of dead comedy actors. I don't know who the other guy
fat
is.
Fat comedy actors.
Yeah.
So there's also around the same time, you also have a script called The Confederacy of Dunces, which was a book written by a guy called John Kennedy Toole, who took his own life. And then, so either he died before the book was published, and then his mum dedicated her life to making sure that the Confederacy of Dunces would be published. And then it won the Pulitzer Prize in 1981, interestingly, for just like what is apparently a very funny book.
With a name like Confederacy of Dunces, I should hope so. sounds like a real old-timey insult for like a pack of idiots.
Like a pack
of dumb shits. What is this, some kind of Confederacy of Dunces?
Yeah. So in 1982, Harold Ramis was signed on to make it, starring...
And he died in 2014!
Yeah. John Belushi was going to star as Ignatius, who's the main character, and Richard Pryor was in talks to play Burma Jones. And then they both passed away. Just days before he was due to actually officially sign the contract, apparently. And then after that, they considered John Candy. So Harold Ramis left the project after John Belushi died. And then it was Maddie Walker who was tasked with adapting the novel. And John Candy actually passed on the role. And then Walker had to, in her own words, have lunch with every fat actor in Hollywood. A few other things went on. John Waters tried to make the film, going to star Divine as Ignatius, who also mm-hmm. passed away. Then Scott Kramer took over. Stephen Fry was brought in to write the screenplay. He talked with Robbie Coltrane about adapting the book. Neither of them had died, so, you know.
It's a curse!
Chris Farley was then offered the lead role. He was killed before he could accept, well, he died. He was like the one, he was like, because the Confessor of Dunces was quite an active thing, and it was like his name was floating around for a long time, but it's kind of unsure whether or not he actually, there was a dispute of the rights going on at the time.
Right.
So Belushi, Candy, and Farley had all died prematurely. But then in the early 2000s, 2004, they actually did a reading of the script with Will Ferrell as Ignatius, Lily Tomlin as his mother Irene, and Mos Def as Burma Jones. It was going to be directed by David Gordon Green. And then there was another argument over rights. Then 2008, he said that Will Ferrell said that Jack Black had maybe been attached at some point. And then in 2012, Zach Galifianakis was cast in an adaptation set to be directed by James Bobin, who instead decided to direct Muppets Most Wanted.
I do remember the Galifianakis one going into production.
And then Steven Soderbergh was going to do it at one point as well. And in 2015, Nick Offerman starred in a production staged on Broadway, a theater production. And that's the only successful adaptation of the book in any medium to date.
Wow.
And wow. Yeah, Steven Soderbergh has said that he, I'm not prone to superstition, but that project has got bad mojo on it.
Okay, I've got a few thoughts on this before we declare whether or not it's a curse or a coincidence or some other third thing. One is that what it's lacking is a reason. The thing about the same could be said for the Superman curse, that like what makes the Poltergeist curse so compelling is that there is a cursey reason why it could happen.
Well, the Superman curse, the first time I read it, it was like the people who play the strongest man in the world are destined to wind up, and it's like laughing in the face of God. A man can fly, can he?
Oh, actually, the Joel, the Schuster, and what are their names? Them being screwed over could be a reason for the curse. But with this and the Inuit one, it's like what is the sacred cow that's being tipped in order for this to create a curse? I don't really understand why there would be a curse on either of those productions.
Yeah.
And another thing, as I think what this actually is that there was a time in Hollywood where Belushi, Candy, and Farley all would have orbited several projects, and these were the ones you heard about because they all fit the same basic description of a chubby to fat comedy male actor. And then all three, the real coincidence is all three of them died, because none of them died because they were overweight or complications related to...
Well, John Candy died of a heart attack.
Oh, did he? Okay, so one out of three, though. And I wouldn't even say John Belushi is, you know, of a weight that you would be concerned.
Well, not these days. Yeah.
And so what really is that these are two projects which had a trio of actors circling it who all fit the same description, and they all died. That's where the coincidence is. And so people go, oh, these projects are cursed because they went from one to the next to the other. I'm sure there were several projects which considered all three actors for a role, you know, that we just don't know about.
I do also just want to take this time to point out that I am well aware of the curse surrounding Terry Gilliam's film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. However, my God, there is a lot to it. Like, there's too many coincidences, and the history is far too long. Like, trying to find just a concise list of, like, this happened, then this happened, it's like... It's insane, and I didn't have the time to... It came out, yeah. And
it came out, that movie got made.
Yeah, and apparently it wasn't great, so that's the curse, you know? But no, like, that famously was in development hell for like 29 years. And there was a... what was supposed to be a making-of documentary made about it called, like, the... Lost at La Mancha, I think it's called. That was supposed to be like a behind-the-scenes documentary about the making of The Man Who Killed Don Quixote after it had been, you know, development hell for fucking what would have been like 13 years at that point. And then the movie still didn't come out. So the documentary came out, and then the movie didn't come out for another 16 years. And then I think they made a sequel to Lost in La Mancha, like to, you know, give the remaining years. But yeah, that feels like a cursed production where it's just like, oh, it's just a fucking bad luck.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to say this is coincidence, all of these ones. But particularly those, the Inuit one and the dancers one, I think is the real story there is three similar profiled actors dying.
Yeah.
And there just happens to be three stories attached to it. Very tempted to call those ones curses, though. I thought there's certainly some interesting, you know, ideas to it. I do like that we're doing what's supposed to be a spooky episode, but is basically just like a skeptic's guide to explaining away why something actually isn't spooky.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So I thought I might do something different. Mm-hmm. These last couple. And that is something we don't talk about a lot here, but it's still related to pop culture, and this is sport curses.
Oh, I know a good sport curse. I listened to a podcast recently on a very interesting sport curse.
What is it? What was it?
The Curse of the Billy Goat.
Oh, go on.
The Curse of the Billy Goat, if you want more information about it, it applies to...
The Cubbies?
The Cubs, yeah, the Cubs. So the Curse of the Billy Goat was a curse placed upon the Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, where, like, you know, 100 years ago, someone disrespected a billy goat that belonged to some crazy old man, and he cursed them. And so the Cubs didn't win the World Series until they had like an 80-year dry streak or something like that.
It might have been more than that, but yeah, it was. So they finally won in, was it 2016?
2016. 1945 to 2016. 71 years.
And there's a joke in. Because it's like, you know, the Cubs will never win a World Series. There's the joke in Back to the Future Part 2 where they're like, yeah, the Cubs just won the World Series. I wish I could go back in time, put some money on the Cubbies. And he's like, wait, and that incites the plot. And they almost won in 2015, which would have been this fucking amazing, like, exciting thing. Because I think they did quite well in 2015, but then won in 2016.
Yep. So if you want to know more about the Curse of the Billy Goat, listen to Do Go On. They did an episode recently on the Curse of the Billy Goat that's very interesting. There's a whole bunch of shit that happens, but the most interesting thing that happened is something called the Steve Bartman incident. And I watched a documentary on this after listening to this podcast. It was a very hard documentary to track down because it was one of those ESPN, was it 30 for 30? Documentaries, which are just notoriously difficult to find if you don't have an ESPN connection. I think I actually just ended up getting ESPN Plus so that I could watch it. The documentary is called Catching Hell. I won't go into it, but it's incredibly interesting. Less about the curse aspect and more about the, you know, just how the public can turn on an innocent person when they care enough about sport.
Do you, so this is two that are, you know, directly related to areas of pop culture we don't talk about very much here, but not only sport but also are you familiar with the Madden curse?
I am not.
So this is a video game based curse that the Madden NFL series, one of these, you know, sport games that releases, it's just Madden 09, Madden 2020, whatever, comes out every year. I don't understand why people would play them. I know you don't understand why people would play
them. I hate them. And I have friends who play them, and they get excited when a new one comes out. What are you? They're $170. You're going to buy the same game. I don't get it.
But so there's a curse that every player who appears on the Madden cover is then doomed to like be out for the season in some horrific injury or just generally playing terribly.
Yeah.
I've got a list if you want to go through what happened to everyone. So 99, you had Garrison Hurst from the San Francisco 49ers. He was the first one to appear on the cover. He suffered a terrible broken ankle not long into the season. So it means that, like, a lot of them, it's like because, you know, it comes out the year before for like that year. So it's like they actually end up missing most of the season that they're the
for which they're named after. Yeah. So it's like the game is then misrepresenting what that year would have been like for that team.
Exactly, yeah. Then Barry Sanders from the Detroit Lions was on Madden 2000. He announces retirement. There you go. Okay. 2001, Eddie George. A rare bobbled pass by George late in the fourth quarter of a playoff. Blah, blah, blah. He played B, fumbled a pass, and they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Dante Culpepper from the Minnesota Vikings suffered a knee injury. That was from 2002. 2003, you had Marshall Faulk from the St. Louis Rams.
What happened to him?
It was the first season he was unable to rush for more than 1,000 yards. He missed the entire entire season due to injury on his knee. Michael Vick, just a short time after it was announced he would be the cover athlete, he fractured his right fibula during a preseason game and he missed the first 11 seasons of the game. Following year, Ray Lewis, he didn't record a single interception in the 2004 season, the first time it ever happened in his career. The following year, 2006, he had Donovan McNabb from the Philadelphia Eagles, who had a groin injury and derailed his season completely. The following year, 2007, you had Sean Alexander. He got a broken foot in week 3 of the season. 2008, you had Vince Young. He scoffed at the Madden curse on late night television when the announcement was made, and then had a slow start only to injure his quadricep in week 6. Then 2009, Brett Favre, he had a relatively decent season only to sustain an injury to his right shoulder later in the season, which would plague him for the remaining 3 seasons up until he retired. 2010, Larry Fitzgerald. This is apparently it's one of the first clear-cut examples of the Madden curse generally missing its mark, as he had several personal records, had a slight letdown in 2010, but generally wasn't that bad. 2011, Drew Brees from the New Orleans Saints. He had one of his worst seasons to date. 2012, Peyton Hills had an injured hamstring, which had him missing all games of the season. 2013, Calvin Johnson. This is the best case. It's like, now this proves it's not a curse because he had a real good season that year. So we've just gone through like literally 13 in a row, and then it's like, no, it's not a curse because the 14th wasn't affected.
Interesting. This is the most convincing one we've had so far, I think. This certainly has the highest body count of any of the curses so far.
Madden 25, which was 2014's one, was Adrian Peterson from the Minnesota Vikings. He had a foot injury. Richard Sherman from the Seattle Seahawks, another one where the curse didn't strike, so it's 2015. 2016, Odell Beckham Jr., the curse didn't strike again. 2017, Rob Gronkowski from the New England Patriots had a hamstring injury, which kicked him out, and then he had another injury later on in the season. Curse didn't strike in 2018 with Tom Brady from the Patriots. Then 2019, it's like it says the curse doesn't strike. I don't think that's when the article was written. Oh, no, 2020.
But then COVID happened.
Yeah, 2020, Patrick Mahomes from the Kansas City Chiefs says it struck and then it didn't. But other fun little things about this one. So that's like, what? Out of over 20, there's, what, like 16?
Is this why COVID happened? Is COVID a direct result from the Madden curse?
Yeah. But apparently, yeah. So like fans of like NFL fans actually lobby to not have their favorite player on the cover.
This is great.
Because of
this do you know what? Curse.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely a curse. This is I'm not only labeling this a curse, I'm saying this is the most convincing curse I've ever heard. Like 16 out of 20 examples of it happening. And then a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah. LaDainian Tomlinson turned down appearing on the cover due to the curse.
Good idea.
Yeah. It does say the injuries that Madden cover athletes experience can be attributed to the physical nature of football.
I guess that is the coincidence part, is there's probably dozens of players per year that get knocked out for whatever reason. And these are,
Also,
one of those guys just retired, which I don't know if it counts.
Well, it seems like in a shock that shocked his fans. So it might have been there was something else going on. Also, to earn the honor of being put on the game cover, a player is coming off a strong year and some regression the following year is likely. Attributing to a cause such as a curse to this randomness is a regression fallacy and a spurious correlation.
A regression fallacy? I mean, that's the Seinfeld curse.
Mm.
Yeah. So Seinfeld curse isn't a curse, it's a regression fallacy.
Oh, Wow.
Boom, ba, boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah. Just regression fallacy written in the Seinfeld font.
But yeah, so it is essentially that, like, a classic example is if your pain gets worse and then you go see a doctor, the pain subsides. Therefore, you benefited from the doctor. It's probably, you know, just as likely that it would have gone away anyway. Like, it's just, it already peaked. You missed the, but in December 2010, EA announced plans to develop a movie based on the Madden curse.
Oh, interesting. Who's going to appear on the cover?
It would be a comedy and not based on fate-based horror movie like The Final Destination. However, in 2014, EA executive Pat O'Brien stated that they're not working on a Madden curse movie.
Nice. I think that's the best one, and I'm glad you saved it to this late in the episode because I really needed one to just really boggle my mind. That's crazy.
Yeah, like there absolutely are a few examples of where, you know, they're not, but...
Mm-hmm. I can look over them.
Yeah. So, the next one, another one related to sport and another one related to a side of pop culture we don't talk about that much, that's music. Music and sport curse. What possibly could be in the middle of the Venn diagram of those two things? And that is a man named Aubrey, don't know what his last name is, but it goes better by Drake, the singer / rapper Drake, what is known as the Drake curse.
Okay.
So, essentially... If Drake wears a jersey, poses for a photo, or in any way appears to be supporting a particular team or person, they'll go on to lose.
No kidding.
some examples.
Look out, Millie Bobby Brown's career then. Feel bad about making that joke.
Yeah. Lavine Kurzawa from the French football giant Paris Saint-Germain posed for a photo with Drake and then lost their next match 5-1. It was their worst defeat in nearly two decades. Conor McGregor lost his fight to Khabib Nurmagomedov after he took a photo with Drake. The Manchester City striker Sergio Aguero met Drake and then missed a penalty in a Champions League game. The latest victim at the time of writing this article, which is a couple of years old, was Anthony Joshua, who was now the former heavyweight champion boxer. Going into his last fight, he was the overwhelming favorite. His opponent, Andy Ruiz Jr., was an 11-1 underdog, and Joshua was an undefeated superstar. So confident was Joshua that before the fight, he tweeted a photo of himself with Drake, along with the caption, "About to break the curse." And then
about
he
to
lost
Drake the curse.
He lost the one-sided fight in the seventh round after being knocked down four times. The AS Roma English tweeted, "All Roma players banned from taking photos with Drake until the end of the season." And yeah, Drake went to some NBA game with a hoodie that had Home Alone era Macaulay Culkin screaming on the back of it, and said, with Kevin, with a bunch of exclamation marks and question marks, a reference to Kevin Durant, trying to weaponize his curse, you know, to defeat Kevin Durant's team. Funnily enough, though, Macaulay Culkin was actually sitting behind him at that game and took a photo of him, was like, and tweeted, "Hey, at Drake, I'm right here, bro, DM me."
And then Macaulay Culkin's podcast failed or something like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, so Drake, don't take a photo with Drake.
I think it's a curse.
Mm.
I think it's a curse. I think we ended on two curses after a string of
like after having to dip into sports of all places. But I think the Anthony Joshua one is so funny. Like it's like that the Malaysian Airlines, you know, like they had two planes disappear within a year, and because they had the first one was so public that when the second one disappeared, there was someone who took a photo of the plane as they boarded it and said, "If the plane goes missing, this is what it looks like." And then it was like
the old Malaysia Airlines curse. Do you know that on Google Earth you can see a plane in a jungle and no one knows what it is, and they reckon it might be one of the Malaysian Airlines, and no one can get to it. No one can get to the plane. It's too far out. And it's in like the Cambodian jungles.
How did the fucking Google... Well, I guess the satellites and shit.
Yeah.
I was
how
thinking,
did Google...
I was thinking Google Maps. And I was like, well, how did the little car with the camera on top see it?
Cool. Well, I'll say then that we got to two curses in the end. And I now believe in curses. Perfect prep for Halloween. Perfect. Now I'm spooked. I'm spooked, Richard, that if I should ever appear on the cover of a Madden game, it'll end my career.
Don't get a photo with Drake.
Yeah, now I'm never going to get a photo with Drake. Not now.
Just God. For the principle of it.
Well, hey, everybody. We'd love to know what you think and if there's any cool pop cultural curses that we may have missed, so you can reach out to us and let people know. I'd recommend going to our Discord server, which is you'll find a link to in the comments and the show notes of this episode. You'll find a link to the Discord server. There'll be a channel dedicated to discussing this podcast. Go in there, share your curse stories. We'd love to hear it. And of course,
does anyone have any personal curses?
Yes,
I have the opposite of one.
Yeah.
A
blessing?
I'm unkillable.
Right. I thought you were gonna be like, I'm blessed with a large penis or something like that.
No, that's the curse.
That is a curse. you can also support Cult Popshire by following us on Instagram and Twitter. Those are the main ones. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/cultpopshire. Come say hi. Love to hear what you guys think of these curses. And stay tuned for the post-credit scene after the music stops playing. And stay tuned for next week when we're going to be covering the From Dusk Till Dawn trilogy. It's going to be a spooky month, Richard, and I'll be honest with you, I'm terrified. All right, welcome along, everybody, to the post-credits scene. This is, of course, a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/cultpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about. And this, the post-credits scene. Richard, what is it and who's it from?
Comes to us from Michael Griffin, and it says, give an update on your most anticipated PS5 game / a console review after however long you've had it. It's almost been a year. And fun fact, I actually just bought an Xbox Series S like an hour or two ago.
Couldn't be a more condemning review of the PlayStation.
No, it's not. I've been wanting to buy. I've wanted to have one for a while, so now I've got the three main current gen consoles as well, because I also have a Switch disc off me for my birthday this year. I like the PS5. It's a good console. The shape of it, the design of it, that a lot of people have. Shed on. I think like when you actually see it physically and you have it in front of you, I think it's a really cool design. I think it looks nice aesthetically. It is very big, especially compared to my Xbox Series S, which is tiny. The controller is the big thing that's like, this feels like a game changer, but no one's really been able to develop for it yet.
I agree. Haptic feedback is exciting, but I've got one game that utilizes it.
And it's the tech demo for it.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't thinking. I've got a game called The Pathless, which somewhat utilizes it, but doesn't. Right.
Yeah, but the best use of it is still in Astro's Playroom, which is essentially the tech demo for the controller. But it's
what a
fucking fantastic game. Best game for PS5. Best PS5 exclusive I've played so far. Ratchet & Clank's supposed to be good. I've only played a little bit of it, though.
It doesn't utilize the haptic feedback in any significant way.
But in terms of an update on the most anticipated games we talked about, there was the Spider-Man Miles Morales I really liked.
I didn't finish.
Platinum to that.
I started playing it and was like, I've played this before. This is just the first one. And then didn't finish it.
I thought it was fantastic. I'm actually going to, because I bought the version that has the code for the remastered PS5 version of the original. So I'll probably download it at some point because I haven't got around to it. I got Sackboy A Big Adventure, but I always forget that I got it. This was one of those like, Richard, you have to say something that you want for Christmas. And I'm like, just give me the Sackboy game. Whatever.
It annoys me because it should have been called Sackboy A Little Big Adventure, and I'll never play it because it didn't call itself that. I played Oddworld Soulstorm. That was the game I said I was looking forward to. Pretty good. I've yet to delve into what other people thought of it. I think some stuff I really liked, because it's a remake of Abe's Exodus, and I really liked some stuff in it, but I think Abe's Exodus is still a better game, or at least more interesting game. The Soulstorm lacked a lot of the variety of environments and creatures that I'm used to exploring in Oddworld games. It felt way more about being story-driven, but then the story was also kind of unclear in parts, and I remember it ends on a cliffhanger, and after it ended, I was like, I'd rather the thing you're cliffhanging was just the final level of the game. Right. You know, like it actually feels more like you haven't ended a story, as opposed to I'm excited for the game, which will come out maybe in another 7 years, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really fun and really good in some parts. And it certainly won me over, because I was very grisly about it when I first started playing it. There's one part in it which took me 3 days to do, like, and not as in I slowly progressed each time. I was stuck in one incredibly difficult section for 3 days, and I didn't like that. I thought that was stupid that they made one. And like, you go on the internet and everyone's like, am I doing this wrong? Because I do not know how to get past this part.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not doing it wrong if you're playing it. It's just an absurdly difficult part of the game.
Yeah. I will say as well, I know Michael Griffin, who wrote this question, has started playing Psychonauts 2, which I'm keen to look into at some point. I downloaded the first one's only $7. So I downloaded that.
I got the first one as well.
A little bit of it.
Actively playing the first one. I might get Psychonauts 2. I'm looking forward to Back for Blood, which is the new Left 4 Dead game.
Well, that's going
to
be on Game Pass, so I can just get it there with my bloody Xbox Series S.
I would say also overall,
the other big like AAA title that I'm kind of like probably the next one I really sink my teeth into is Far Cry 6, which comes out at the end of the week.
Right. I think that I'm glad I have it, because I like having the latest console, but it is yet to truly make me go like, boy, am I glad I got a PS5, which is concerning because I never felt that about a PS4 either.
Right.
I never was like, this is why I got a PS4.
The PS4, like, as late in its life as it got, like, I think there are definitely things like, you wouldn't have been able to play Uncharted 4 or Last of Us 2.
Potentially, I guess so. It's more like the leaps between consoles is getting less noticeable.
Well, I think that's deliberate as well. The fact that they've made the PS5 backwards compatible, and the PS Plus collection they have, to me, it feels like, hey, upgrade it if you feel like, if you miss the PS4, this would be a great place to start. Like, that's how I think they're doing the PS5, which is good for now, I think. And it's just same stuff but faster. And the thing that I'm that amazes me the most about the PS5 is how quickly I can go from pressing the PS button to turn on the console to playing a game. Especially like in Miles Morales, it's like within 12 seconds you're swinging with the exaggerated swagger of a black teenager. Which is a line from it's a memed line from a review of the game.
Oh, okay. Thank God.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.